Happy to welcome back State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another Tacky Talk. And we missed you last week, Tacky. How are you?
Hey, I'm good to see you, Joe. I'm sorry about that. I hope the audience understands. Sometimes my schedule gets a little bit wacky, and some things could not be avoided in the schedule. And sadly, I know you have limited time too. And like a blind date unable to match correctly, although this is not a blind date, unlike a match.com situation, sometimes the calendar doesn't work out.
Well, it's kind of nice because now we're into April, so we can talk about all things spring.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a cloudy day and it's still like 40 degrees out. But, you know, spring will get here eventually. And opening day in New York got postponed right off the bat. So the Sox didn't get a kickoff. I keep using wrong terms. I'm using football terms now. But opening day is actually going to be the same day as the Marathon Patriots Day in Fenway.
That's right. As I recall, didn't you throw out a pitch at Fenway last year?
I did it last May as part of Asian American Pacific Islander Month. And I do have a video at some point if you all want to put that up and see. I actually did get to the plate, but I did have a bounce at the end. The catcher backed out on the edge. But, you know, edge of the mound, I did get it over there.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, that's all that counts. And it must have been pretty cool to be out there on Fenway.
It was. It was actually very nice and also very nice to recognize AIP Month. The Red Sox, again, are going to do another AIP Month event. I'm not privy to those details. Last year, I did help organize a second event for important organizations ranging from human services to domestic violence to English classes, et cetera. The Sox will likely do another similar type of event this year. And I'm aware that Quincy Asian Resources is involved in this year's planning.
Yep, very much so. They're really looking forward to it. So we've had Philip Chong on earlier. We'll have him on again, too, to bring folks up to date in May, which will be here before we know it, actually.
Well, it's April 7th, and the session ends on July 31st, pending no other emergency pandemic horror show. We should follow the calendar. And I've been saying this a lot lately, even though there's essentially a forum. Or so months left, I mean, less than 4 months left in the calendar. It does feel like forever, given the fact that we have not been out of a formal session for 3+ years now. And I think the public doesn't understand that we have been in formal session essentially or on call on pins and needles waiting for something to call happen. And, you know, I've been running public hearings throughout pandemic and even started the pandemic, including stuff that wasn't put into public. I mean, I was running internal committee briefings using a new technology none of us knew how to use to keep the committee members informed of the status of industry issues throughout 2020 to 2021.
Yeah, it really was building the plane while we were flying it, for sure, for a lot of people. And I don't think that's...
Well, you're right. It is going to be an adjustment back. I know there's a lot of news stories about people who are resistant to going back to the office. And I do understand, you know, crowded areas. I do understand that people still get infected with COVID, even though some people have mild symptoms. But, you know, you may get mild symptoms enough to lay you down for 5 days. I mean, and quite frankly, the workforce, given the very low unemployment rate numbers, we're not quite pre-pandemic, but we're getting there. You know, having your workforce ill is not helpful. To consumers nor to employers. So that's why I still think it's enormously important. Everyone has a degree of caution here, including employers, because you lose a portion of your workforce. And, you know, even if it gets to your consumers, that doesn't create consumer confidence. And that has a ripple effect on our economy. So, I mean, everyone can do what they want. I tell people it's been almost, you know, we're in year three, essentially. We don't know what you're doing at this point. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, no matter what I say, it doesn't matter anymore as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you all should know what you're doing. But it does have a ripple impact. Being sick from work has a legit impact on the economy, on your employers, and if you're a front-facing business, on the consumers.
Yeah, I can tell you, I mean, just from personal experience, been out to eat a few times, and, you know, it's a different experience now. The workforce shortage is obvious. You know, things take a lot longer. Folks are more hurried. It's just not the same experience.
I agree completely. You know, the few times I've been out to eat, I've obviously gone to the supermarket a lot, as you guys all hear about my supermarket experiences. But I mean, I don't buy a lot of other retail, honestly, guys. I mean, I don't buy a lot of clothes. I don't, I'll get to Home Depot or something like that if I need something because I need it. But my joy of my life is better on supermarkets because that's where I end up most of all times, I suspect many of us are. Yeah, I mean, those are two driving forces in my life, and that's my greatest observations. But yeah, you can see the shortage of workforce. And staffing on high peak hours were difficult. And, I suspect as we head into more holiday sales, holiday shopping areas, and now we're going to head to the summer months, workforce shortage on vacationing, on hospitality is going to be extremely apparent in hotels, bed and breakfasts, tourist opportunities, things like whale watching and, the Freedom Trail, even if you're on the Cape, getting lifeguards and, servers and cleanup staff, and even from municipalities for cleanup workers and even contractors that have to do that. There's going to be a real challenge. And there's also a shortage of actually people forget we're very dependent on international temporary workers during the summertime.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, kids, college kids on break come over here to work, and I know there's going to be a severe shortage this year.
Continuation of the challenges of people need to be tested and vaccinated to come into the US that is not a US citizen, as well as general immigration horror shows because the feds can't figure it out. And other countries, are still in various degrees of Omicron rise. Don't be surprised if there's more travel bans or travel advisories popping up as we head into summer months as this new BA2 wave moves through, which we've seen the wastewater samples in Massachusetts, it's rising quickly. And then, there's supposedly yet another variant discovered in China off of BA2, but no one knows if it does anything yet. So, we'll see where that comes up. But don't be surprised we see another cousin of this thing, come summertime.
Yeah, summertime, I guess it'll be a little better. At least we'll be able to get outdoors more. But hopefully that'll give time to develop a specific vaccine for that new variant.
Oh, it's very obvious that we're heading for flu shot. I mean, this is exactly like you're taking a flu shot. It's like getting a tetanus shot every 10 years. Kids get a chickenpox shot. You got the shingles shot, but it's going to look like very much like a flu shot situation. And if you intend to travel overseas, I do always advise folks to get travel insurance for healthcare. I'm not promoting any companies, but I've used sadly actually had to use overseas healthcare on vacation. And I was very thankful I paid for overseas health insurance. It made a I didn't have to pick up any costs at all. It was 100% covered.
Great. Yeah, good idea to definitely check with your healthcare provider before you travel, just to make sure you know what you have and what you need.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think this is kind of the thing people have to rethink, particularly going to foreign countries. Your health insurance coverage may not provide that, and paying $30 or $40 for supplemental insurance overseas and making sure what the coverage level is, it will bring some peace of mind. God forbid something bad happens.
Yeah, well worth it for sure. What is happening at the State House this week, Tacky? I know the governor signed the supplemental budget, like $1.6 billion or something.
Yeah, this is all bill paying. It's not a true supplemental budget. In my younger days, we used to call these things deficiency budgets. And because of the nature of COVID, the bills pick up and the bills continue to rise. We're just very fortunate that we had such strong revenues that it doesn't create a budget cut. So in case you're wondering what happens if we have bills we can't pay, we got to cut the main budget down to pay off these bills. And basically, you have to hurt somebody else in state government in exchange for paying off bills that we can't avoid. And COVID in particular has created a lot of rising costs all around the board, particularly in the healthcare industries. And hospitals aren't quite out of it. The lack of inpatient services paid by private insurance, has a huge effect when their beds are being consumed by COVID patients for 4 months.
Anything in that for Quincy this time around?
No, this is strictly bill paying. This is strictly bill paying. There is no opportunities for special earmarking and things like that. Like I said, this is very unusual circumstance. Normally, we'd be happily talking about surplus monies for the purposes of, goodie packages for Quincy. And there may be an opportunity for that. I mean, the budget will have, I think, strong numbers in FY23. I do believe there'll be another supplemental budget opportunity, perhaps again this July. But this particular one, thankfully, we do have money to pay bills. And like I said, people don't realize when we don't have the surplus money to pay bills, particularly in extraordinary circumstances today, we're just going to have to cut the budget.
Yeah. Okay. And the process is underway, right, for the next year's fiscal budget already?
Yeah, we expect actually next week that the House Ways and Means Committee will have its budget available to the public. Amendments we do next Friday, the 15th, provided we hold the schedule. And then we will take a sort of a break, if you can call my life a break. It's really not a break, but I mean, Ways and Means will take the week of Patriots Day to sort through probably 1,200 to 1,300 amendments, line them up in the recommendation to the chair during that week, and then we'll start debate the Monday after. So April is kind of a late month. The last week of April is actually a full week. Normally we go, you know, before at the end of the month because we, but it's just how Patriots Day lines up this year and in the way the calendar is lined up. So yeah, it's going to be very busy at the end of the month, but you know, the building is open as we all know, and you can come visit. And again, this is the format of preference for most, pretty much everybody I talk to. Very few people want in-person meetings. I mean, I've had some done in, you know, coffee shops in Quincy. I mean, this is what I've always done. I mean, people don't really have to go into the building to see me. We've always made accommodations for people down here in public settings or their office places for me to visit. That hasn't really changed other than, you know, wearing masks and people like to be outside meetings. But I mean, in terms of, you know, business interests and other types of special interest groups, it's still all Zoom-based meetings. There is no, what do you call it, advocacy slash information, you know, type events. We still are not opening the building for major events because, you know, the Great Hall can hold like 300 people, right? So we're the building is still trying to figure out, you know, should we allow the opportunity for super spreaders? And tourists is open, but you know, they're going to limit how many people are in the tour group as they move through to people through the building. So we are open, but I remind people, you know, you should definitely take caution coming in because I'm hearing more and more people catching BA2. All right. I got another text from a friend before we start today's call informing me of another infection situation. And I had my first close contact call this past weekend. So thankfully, I'm come up negative, but I'll keep taking those take-home tests. And oh, yeah, the feds will still have take-home tests for you to get. So if you got that first one, you can get a second set for free at the take-home test. If you didn't get your first one, you get two sets for free, paid for by your tax dollars.
Yeah, that's right. I think the free masks are about exhausted now, but you can ask at your local pharmacy if they have any, they can give them to you.
Yeah, mask is a supply chain of masks is extremely zipped up right now, clearly. Mm-hmm. And I know everyone wants those N95 or KN95 masks. I mean, the number reflects the filtration rate of particles in the air that can filter out. You know, higher quality is better. But again, it's proximity. The closer you are to people, the higher odds you're going to get whatever you got, the first guy. It's no different from the flu or the norovirus, which is, by the way, making its way around norovirus. I've got friends who've got norovirus. Mm-hmm. 5 days of stomach misery. And the flu. So it's all proximity driven. So yeah, do you need, you know, N95? Yeah, you're going to be close up in people's faces, but if you're going to be like 4 feet apart or 6 feet apart, you know, a cloth mask and N80 mask, you know, another type mask, you know, is, you know, it's probably all right. You know, you can hand sanitize. But again, if you're going to be like, you know, within 2 feet people, 3 feet of people regularly or in a crowded room, the high quality mask is recommended.
Yeah. Speaking of the State House, what's going on in the actual building, Tacky? All the scaffolding and construction material, what are they doing?
We do a fairly regular upkeep of the building. You see, I mean, the front of the building in particular, you know, I believe was built in 1797, I believe, 1797. So, I mean, the front of the building has always got scaffolding up. It's just an endless degree of constant upkeep. Okay. At this stage, we probably should pass a bond bill at some point for a major renovation again. I think the last one we did was 1999. It actually shored up the front staircase in particular that was having sinking issues.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's water damage. I mean, it's right on top of the hill. So, I mean, water, when it, you know, hits the top, it keeps slowing down. It's going to cause erosion, right? So, it's been a long time, actually, when you think about it, since the building had a major bond bill go through. And I don't know if this governor is interested in doing it. We'll wait to see what the new governor would like to do. But this doesn't seem to be a plan from Governor Baker to do any more major State House renovations.
The topic of the state gas tax has come up again, Jackie. I know this is something that we've talked about before here, but have you formed a different opinion about that?
Well, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, I think people, the way it's being portrayed is that you can substitute one thing for another. And the answer is not more trickier than that. And here's why I say that. You know, we sell state bonds to the public because we need to pay for big capital projects, right? And you get a fixed interest rate on those bonds. The expectation is that you can pay the bonds. And the dedication of gas tax, a part of the casino money into the transportation trust fund and any other money we can put in free cash, you know, is assurances that that's going to be there. Now, think about this, everybody. If we lower the gas tax, is there any guarantee we're going to raise it again? No, because we're the legislature. So now, you know, you're going to substitute some alternative money that isn't money the bondholders and Wall Street's looking at you like, okay, well, we can trust you guys to pay these things. And then we do one-time payment because, again, these are one-time monies. And then the clamor is going to be in a couple of months that Ukraine and, you know, the Biden's administration's release of oil reserves isn't sufficient to bring the prices to a much lower level because people want to pay as little as possible. And then, you know, question is, does the legislature bring the tax up to the previous level or not? People who hold bonds do not like government's indecisions, like any business. And they like to have a surety that they can predict the outcomes at some level, at least some confidence level. If, you know, obviously can't predict everything, but some confidence level. So if you're holding a government debt and you see me decline your revenue stream to pay your bond, you're going to offer me a good or bad interest rate in the long run.
Yeah, it's going to be a higher rate, obviously. Yeah,
higher risk equals higher interest rates that we pay back. So sure, we can do that. I mean, sure, we try to do a substitution. But again, there's no guarantee that the legislature will raise those taxes, which, by the way, for those of you who care about how we vote, that will be counted as a tax increase vote.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That would not be counted as a non-tax increase vote. It will be counted as a tax increase vote.
Yeah, so there's some political ramifications here too. Sure. Okay.
Oh, yeah. You think people are going to like figure this out? I mean, isn't like, you know, people say, oh, yeah, you know, it was a temporary lower tax. And then, you know, it went back up when Tacky, you know, voted back up again. I mean, dude, I mean, that's not how it's going to be portrayed in the media. That's not how it's going to be portrayed in the public. People do not say all those words. They just say the word. No, Tacky voted lower to gas tax. Tacky voted to bring the tax, raise the gas tax. There is no like, oh, brought it back to regular levels. It's not like people talk that way in real life. I mean, as you guys have learned over 2+ years listening to me, I do understand how the way people think in terms of how much information they want to convey on issues that are much more complex. And I will put you to sleep if I go into a lengthy explanation of how things work. So, I mean, this is public relations, political, you can call it what you want, but the communication in this is not as simple as people think it is. And, you know, once again, I mean, you know, we haven't got signals from bondholders, well, you know, in Wall Street who are issuing our bonds. Well, what's your confidence level? And by the way, the governor filed a massive bond bill to match the federal infrastructure bill. So we have more debt coming. Because for us to get that federal infrastructure money, we have to come up with 10 to 20% of that. And it's $9.5 billion. We have to come up to 10 or 20% depending on the project. So we generally use 20% because why they always take the more conservative number. You know, of $9.5 billion, the state has to pop up.
$20 million, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a lot of money that we're going to have to cough up, plus, you know, regular infrastructure costs. So these are all bonded. So do you want the better bond interest rate or the more at-risk bond interest rate?
Yeah, you want the better rate, obviously. Just like if you're going out to refinance your house, you want the better rate.
That's correct. And they see us playing around the gas tax because they you know, has an assurance about what the revenue stream projections could possibly be like. Listen, there's no guarantee of life. They're just trying to make the best guesses too based on their knowledge and calculations of things. And you know, I know it's, you know, it goes up and down because, you know, driving patterns and all that, but they want to have some assurances of that. So, you know, you tell me, guys, if you're holding debt from the government, and you hear that we're going to cut a revenue stream, and there's no guarantee we're going to put that revenue stream back in place because the voters and the media tell us that, you know, oh, you've survived this long with a reduction, and kind of neglect the one-time payment of other tax money filling in because no one's going to talk about that.
Right. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. People judge things by, you know, how it affects their wallet. That's it.
And the public relations component of it. Right. So, you know, how you frame an argument determines what people think of it. So as I like to say, I mean, there's a big adult pants you're going to have to wear at some point in this gig, and being in adult pants means someone's going to be mad at you.
If you please everybody, then you're doing something wrong.
And everybody, it means you're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Right. Yeah. What about sources of new revenue like legalized sports betting?
Waiting for the Senate. I mean, we obviously had voted in the House. I think the revenue streams are very conservative numbers from the governor's office. I think it's actually higher as we look at the casino numbers. Now, the casino in particular in Everett has been come to full fruition. Even post or new normal, what you want to call the life we're living today, the numbers are very clearly moving at a higher rate than I think projections were initially. Same thing on the lottery. The lottery has exceeded expectations again as we come into this new normal. So sports betting, you know, I think it's like a $30, $40 million zone. I think it's a very conservative number. I think it's much, much higher once it comes to full, you know, full functionality. Same thing in marijuana. I mean, marijuana numbers are coming much higher. I mean, they're close to, you know, closing on three digit millions. We thought we stayed in the low two digits. I thought it was going to be closer to $25 million. It's blown past that. Despite supply chain problems, you can't get enough of it. So, you know, maybe those numbers will equalize if there's enough supply, even though we tax the stuff, maybe because of the higher supply, you know, the market value will decline a bit and we'll get some less revenue off because it's a percentage of sales.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that one's kind of one of those things that are in flux because you have a lot of supply and we're taxing you on a percentage of the sales and the price goes down.
Right.
You guys can do the math at home. You know how that works.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah. It's like a commodity basically. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like everything else. I mean, if the price goes down, then the sales tax or the excise tax or whatever, you know, takes a hit. Yeah, it's not complicated. It's very simple. So, and like, you know, we're not selling as many cars right now.
So, that too. Yeah.
So, you know, we take a hit there. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, the Senate needs to provide a proposal. And when you see a proposal come out of Senate, it means that the Senate person has the votes. Okay. It's not that complicated, people. I mean, I tell folks, politics is very simple in our level. You see a public proposal from the Senate president, that means she's already counted her votes.
Okay. Well, she's not going to follow a losing battle, right?
We very rarely put anything on the floor unless we're sure that we have something that can pass.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Why do we waste everyone's time? So you got to get that compromises going long before you hit the floor. And of course, as you see by things like an amendment to bills, a compromise continues during the course of debate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can we try and shed some clarity, Tacky, on the whole issue of app-based drivers?
Yeah, I am as confused as everyone else.
Trying to.
So the media has made a very strong effort to do this, and the PR campaigns on both sides of this issue will probably start to heat up in another 60 or so days. And we'll be interested to see if either one can explain this in less than 15 seconds of commercials. All righty. The independent contract law in Massachusetts is in statute, but it's largely driven by Supreme Judicial Court cases.
Okay.
It's a three-pronged test of whether or not the person that is the independent contractor, I've got to do this from the top of my head, is able to determine how to complete said contract within terms of contract, is not performing in a manner that makes them an employee, that and then it creates basically an enrichment for the employer because of the employee's work. The freedom to do how you want to do it, the freedom to choose more than one employer by contract is not a hard test, right? You can have five different employers with five different contracts, as long as you perform those contracts and you settle in terms of contracts to get paid. The hardest part of that test in the Supreme Judicial Court is whether or not that contract makes that person an employee, because everything in there basically equivalents an employee status, but you don't want to, let's say, pay healthcare. Or you do something that actually enriches the employer as if you're an employee. And that means in the regular course of business. So it's one thing if you've been contracted to come to a business owner's place and you want to put a siding on the side of the siding on the side of the building. Yeah, that's a contract. Independent contractor comes in, you do that. But it's a little trickier if you hire an independent contractor to sit in your retail store to sell things 20, you know, as 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, whatever by contract, as opposed to coming in to do one type of sale product for 4 hours for one day, and that's all you're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting question. So independent contract law, and I think somebody's going to remind me the third prong of this three-prong test, but the one that's the hardest is the one I'm describing.
Yeah.
Right. Does that job contract constitute being a employer status and employee status? As I say, if you're going to, again, do some construction work and outside of a business, yeah, it enriches the business owner, but that's not the business owner's regular course of business to do, you know, fixing their own, you know, outside of their store. But on the inside of the store, if they're selling paint, then you're selling paint for as an independent contractor, but that's kind of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And you're told you can't do this anywhere else. And even you can do it somewhere else, it's still treated basically like an employee without benefits. But if you're only in to sell like one, like let's say you come into contract to sell pine cones at a paint store and you're only there for 1 weekend.
Okay. Yeah. Oh boy, I can see why it's confusing. Because if you're working for one of these rideshare companies, you are enriching that company.
Yeah, and this is pingo, I call it the match.com problem.
Mm.
So the idea of a lot of these like StubHub and Match.com and eHarmony and Craigslist and so many of these other ones out there that aren't dating apps. I mean, two of them off the bat, but I mean, the other ones claim they're a platform for for a person seeking employment from someone else. So the argument that should be presented is this: Joe needs a ride. Joe doesn't know how to get a ride. Joe doesn't like taxi cabs for whatever reason. Joe decides that he'll go on to Uber to find a match to provide the services you want. And you will pay said services pursuant to Uber's agreement via the agreement they have with the driver to provide that service on the platform. You're both paying for the platform through what you pay the Uber driver. The Uber driver pays the platform for a fee for each service because they're using their platform. What gets really bizarre here is that you're not negotiating a price with the Uber driver, right? Those who take Uber know it's a variable cost based on a number of different factors, but you yourself aren't telling the driver, you know, I'll pay you $5.
Oh,
the
contractor
comes back and says, oh, you know, I want 10.
Right.
Now, if you've been in other countries, sometimes the cab drivers actually are negotiable because there's no meter. I've done this before. They want $7. I say $3, and we become this like 30-cent negotiation to four.
No kidding.
So, I mean, in other countries that aren't Uber countries, I mean, you know, or they may have Uber as well. You know, some, you know, you can actually negotiating for a ride. Mind you, there's no meter, and you're not sure what's going to happen to you, but, you know.
But if you're willing to take the risk.
that's your risk, right? And same thing with Uber, there's a risk there. But at least you got an Uber driver, there's a fixed cost associated with, or another rideshare company, if you're in a different country, right. You know, but it's a predictable cost. You can choose when not to pay that cost.
Yep.
Well, you may choose an alternative, but you or yourself are not negotiating. It's like, let's use the match.com because this is the most obvious understanding. You know, you're seeking someone for the evening and you have, or try to find love or whatever. And, you know, you do whatever profile and they see the person. Well, the match has been created. Now it's up to you and that person to work out how are you going to get together? You going to split dinner or not? What the conditions of going out would be, if there are any conditions. Or maybe you just say, no, this isn't going to work. These conditions don't work. But you're paying a fee for the platform to engage in that connection and you negotiate from there.
Yeah, okay.
So The difference is that, you know, you're both paying for the service of dating service, but then you're on your own once you find each other.
Yeah. So how does the dating service generate revenue then? Not from the users, but from what, selling ads on that platform?
Selling ads, or they charge the users for using the platform. It's being put into a big open space and you're wandering around. If you want an in-person analogy, the Uber platform, you use the same analogy there. You're in a big open space and you're wandering around. Some people are holding a sign saying, you know, we'll drive for you. And you put up a sign saying, I'm looking for someone. You kind of wander around trying to figure out, you know, this one makes sense. And the drivers can say no. Obviously, they can take themselves online. And if that once they experience that at this point, I suspect when a driver never shows up, they cancel you know, 2 hours before. But you don't have a contract yet on that agreement. In fact, you subscribe. If this was a contract situation and you say you're going to be here too, well, you're going to be there too. But you don't have a contract yet.
Yeah. But okay.
You see why this is confusing, right? Because people do this, but don't think the way what's really going on. Right. So the question now becomes, you know, are these independent contractors? And under the current law, that prong test about, are you enriching the employer, is a real question mark. That's extremely unclear here because, you know, Uber sets the price. Uber has a contract with the driver. Uber has a contract actually with this person seeking the driver because they have signed terms of service agreement as part of using Uber app. Uber does not tell you when you can drive. Uber does not tell you, you know, the conditions of when you can drive, but they do set standards that are set by consumers on whether or not you continue employment or most actually using the platform, because the consumers can give you a star rating. Mm-hmm. Star rating is how they do determine whether or not you meet the satisfaction in terms of contract for the consumer.
Yeah.
So that's not really their decision. It's actually the consumer decision. Yeah, this is very bizarre.
Yeah. And does Uber take a piece of that revenue that's generated from that contract? They do. Okay.
Yeah, that's how they make their money. Okay. Because you're using the privilege of the platform, but you only make money if you make money off the platform.
Yeah. So they are being enriched then in that case.
Absolutely. And this gets very confusing quickly about what they are. So they sort of meet, you know, the prongs of, you know, you can work for Lyft and Uber. They can't restrict you from driving a cab. They can't restrict you from deciding you're going to do your own courier service. As you know, as an individual that's not employed by anyone else, you can do what you want. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't dictate your hours. They don't dictate terms. But they, like any other contract, you know, you need to have a driver's license. Well, that's not unusual. Contracts can say you have the license. You don't have a criminal record. Corey checks are not unusual for contracts, right? That's acceptable. But I mean, then again, you don't negotiate a price with the Uber driver. Uber sets the price.
Right. So is it the drivers want to be employees and the companies want them to be independent contractors? Is that what's going on here?
Well, Uber obviously wants to make them independent contractors. And this gets very confusing, folks.
Yeah.
I believe the ballot question is to keep them as an independent contractor status pursuant to Uber's definition of independent contractor, which again, as you just heard, it's kind of a big ball of crazy. Drivers, I suspect, are going to come in two camps. One, they like the idea of being a full-time employee where they got employment benefits, vacation time, and everything else. But then again, you get vacation time, you lose some freedom when you do not want to work, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, on the other side, you know, you want to have no employee status or any kind of status, enjoy the status quo because of this entire freedom of building your own business model.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they keep your cars clean. That's a business expense under Schedule C. If you try to do that in your taxes, you can expand your car's business expenses immensely around that stuff. You can, you know, you're in a competitive marketplace in your geographic zone. And some people, you know, need to do a living on this because they need maximum income possible. They don't want to end up having to pay healthcare share benefits, for example.
Right.
You know, maybe their spouse has a spouse that has healthcare insurance covering them, or they can find a way to deal on the Commonwealth Connector if that's the case, because Uber would be using a multi-state franchise healthcare system if that's what we make them do to become employers.
Much more expensive. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Much more expensive. So, I mean, I'm not saying it will be, I'm saying it could be.
Right.
So it depends on the driver, right? It depends on what your business model is, a driver for Uber, and it depends on how, you know, you want to be formed, right? And if you're an employee, consumer, it'll be interesting if they still allow consumer ratings as a determination performance, Or is Uber going to have to find a new way to determine your performance as an employer determining the quality of your work?
Right.
I mean, it's like saying that if you're working a business and your ability to stay employed revolves around people putting anonymous things in a comment box.
Yeah.
Joe is great. Joe sucks. I mean, and that would determine whether Joe keeps a job.
Right.
I mean, this is, it's.
Yeah,
it's
no, I see the problem here. Yeah, I see. And then, you know, if they do become employees, then do they unionize too? We're seeing Amazon being faced with this issue right now too.
You're absolutely correct. And it gets really weird really quickly because not two Uber drivers were the same in terms of how they approach doing their jobs and how they do the business. And you know, again, you know, Uber only able to be successful if the Uber drivers are good quality, low chance of bad things happening, a positive customer experience. Otherwise, Uber's platform doesn't work.
Yeah. And then as a rider, you know, if they are employees, then are you covered under, you know, Uber's umbrella of liability insurance and you know, personal injury insurance, things like that?
Well, in Massachusetts, we do have a ride share law. So we do require minimum insurance and different tiers of insurance based on circumstances, which actually puts actually kind of a weird burden on an Uber driver. So you have to carry high levels of insurance when you're on the job.
Okay.
You can carry normal insurance when you're not on the job because that's your own car.
Right.
So, I mean, again, it's a business model of each individual. If I was an Uber driver, I would really be considering a lot higher level of insurance because I don't want to get personally sued because that's what an independent contractor did.
Right.
Sue one, like a private, you can sue the independent contractor directly.
Yep.
So obviously, you know, if I'm going to do this job and I would like to have a higher degree of insurance, particularly in the metal coverage end, if God forbid the passenger gets hurt in any form, whether at fault or not,
right,
you need that immediate coverage right away for both yourself and your passengers. You know, even today, I mean, if someone gets hurt, you're driving your family members, that insurance coverage for passengers is extremely important in your everyday life to begin with, much less as a personal business where they could sue you. And it's not just app-based. So what this does is, I know it's an app-based thing, but it sets a precedent that applies with other gig workers, such as entertainers, photographers, you know, people who do catering. You know, there's a lot of independent contractors in our lives we never really think about because why would we think about it? You're just interested in getting your services. I mean, people don't, as you know, like talk about all the time on video here with, we don't ever think about this. I mean, they just get what they want to get, right?
Right.
Yep. But you have a lot of folks around you in life that are independent contractors that you never thought of it before.
Yeah, I mean,
entertainers.
When I came into work this morning, there was the cleaning company was here, you know, so I mean, I'm sure they work for themselves. That's their own company.
Mm-hmm. Landscaping. Mm-hmm. A lot of people use independent contractors because, and we just talked about seasonal workers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of independent contractors can also be seasonal workers. They're here for, you know, 2 or 3 months working the hospitality and go, or maybe they become W-2 employees if that's a situation, right? It's you know, every business is different, every person's different. And as I kind of started this conversation, defining independent contractor is a lot slippier, slopey than it looks because of the nature of SJC cases. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, because of SJC cases.
Hmm. Interesting.
So the answer is, I'm not sure if I can explain this ballot question properly to anybody. It's extraordinarily confusing, but I suspect at the end of the day, the Ubers of the world, other rideshare companies want to dictate a new independent contractor law.
Yeah. So it is going to be in the ballot though, right? Is that they got the approval?
Yeah, okay. They're going to get the decisions. They have to come back. And again, because I deal with this, the retail alcohol issue, they're going to have to, you know, get a second set of signatures. The legislature doesn't get anything on the governor's desk by May 4th. They're going to have to go to get signatures for an August deadline. That's not going to be a problem with these guys. And, you know, again, my continued belief is twofold. One is, how good is your promotional campaign to voters to understand what they're voting for? And being a well-informed voter on ballot questions is strongly encouraged. And secondly, people either don't participate in that part of the ballot because they don't understand it, or they vote no because they don't understand what they're voting yes for.
Right. Yeah. So you have to be careful with that because, I mean, either vote can have implications against what you had intended. So you really need to educate yourself.
Agreed. And it's like I said, people ask me, is that a yes or no vote? I'm like, I'm not sure sometimes because I can't remember what is going on here, right?
Yes.
Everyone watching from this conversation, it's not as simple as it looks.
Yeah, well, the whole it happened with the right to repair law too. You know, that was confusing as well, and there was marketing on both sides trying to sway people's opinions on that one too.
Yeah, but when you have the right phrase, right, people will take the catch line. You know, right to repair. Well, it sounds cool because they want to give you a right, but by the way, folks, right to repair lets your mechanic get into your system and just take all your data, and they don't have to ask your permission.
Right. Yeah. So be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. You know, do you want someone going into your drawers of your house and they didn't tell you or ask you? I mean, this is kind of part of the problem, these slangs and marketing ploys that are used. And this is why people hate the legislature, because we're so slow and deliberative. But I actually look and read at stuff and think about it applies to how real life works, you know, as opposed to a big money interest and putting down ballot questions for their own purposes. But, yeah. you know, what is what it is.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, Techie, can we talk a little bit about the, I know there's been a bit of a shift in your representative district right here in Quincy now.
Yeah, I'm not clear exactly what's going on there, because apparently the Patriot Ledger has seen the map and I haven't.
I haven't seen it either. So yeah.
I was told the Ledger had it somehow. I have no idea.
Oh.
My district has expanded. I mean, according to the map we did for census blocks, for those a little bit of recall, we did our house districts by census blocks, because when the census came out in mid-August, it wasn't enough time for cities and towns to put out new precinct maps. And we're required to have something in place by 1 year prior to the next election on a new district that goes into effect on January 1st of this, well, this past January 1st. Right. So as a result, the city of Quincy actually, for the first time in a very long time, has had to change their precinct lines to reflect the census blocks for my rep districts. And if you're a little town, you may have splits. I mean, let's not talk about the little towns. It gets weird there.
Yeah,
let's avoid that conversation. So the city, they knew it was coming, but they're very unhappy, I'm sure. I think he's not happy with us. You know, need to redo the lines, and it has to be approved by the Secretary of State. And this is very crucial for me, because since I don't represent the whole city, for my nomination papers for re-election, has to reflect a new district, not the prior district's appearance. So like Ward 1 being all the peninsula is easy. But once I get into like Ward 5, you know, 4 or 5 precinct 1 has been split, but it's not the same map I saw back, you know, in September, right, in the last approval. And I don't know what it looks like exactly.
I haven't seen it either. Yeah, I do know that 3-3 is going back to Bruce Ayers district, the first Norfolk district.
Well, 3-5, the Montclair district.
Yes, yeah, it was 3-5, okay. No.
Hold it, 3-3? No, yeah, 3-3, I'm sorry. The Ponce Riverside.
Yep, exactly.
And we pushed Dan Hunt back over the river.
That's right. That's right.
Because last district in 2010, I lost 3-5 Montclair. That little square piece that's Montclair neighborhood behind the Stop and Shop on Newport Ave is actually, it's a perfect rectangle, actually. It's because Dan Hunt came with a bridge to take that pot in the Ponson on West Quantum Street. And then to cut to Randolph, he needed to cut through Montclair, which is why I lost Montclair that year. And I picked up basically the area up to the clam box. I hate to describe freezing lines. Geographic markers make more sense. So this time out, we pushed Dan Hunt back over into Dorchester. He can stay there. And Bruce, picked up the Ponce River and kept Montclair on the way to Randolph via the Blue Hills. I end up picking up Hancock Street heading northbound as far as the Warehouse Diner.
Oh, okay.
And actually go far as south as River Street, which is, isn't it like the Italian club there? That
yes.
area
with yes.
the bocce courts. And yep. The landmark would be South Cove Manor, would be the yep. landmark. Not South Cove Manor itself, but near South Cove Manor. I'm just in the vicinity of like two streets north. And then I go as far west as the Furnished Book Park Rotary.
Okay.
And then obviously I stay at the beach and the southern peninsula of Germantown, Abershore, Marymount, and Montclair.
Okay.
And then I still stop at St. John's Church on the Quincy Center side.
Okay.
So the Speaker's district, Ron's district, actually got bigger in Ward 2 because of population growth, and he actually had to shrink his physical geography.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, also experienced large population growth, but also had to expand geography. It's weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was just below number target number and now slightly above target number with this change. So I represent 45% of the city, give or take, you know, at this point. And yeah, it's expanded. So no, I don't know all my precinct lines.
Okay.
All I can tell you geographically by landmark where it is, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think that's helpful, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and I pick up all the Walls and Center, for example, as a result of this change. You know, the 99 Ranch, mm-hmm. the old Big Y, the old Hannaford's old Victory.
You know, Shaw's before that, yeah.
Shaw's before that, you know, that geographic zone. So I think when you get your ballot this September for the primaries and the ballot this fall, you'll be surprised to see my name in places that you haven't seen before. And, you know, I understand it's 4 or 5 precinct one is going to be split in half between me and Bruce to adjust the census blocks. Right. I don't know where that cutoff is.
Yeah, I don't either. I haven't seen the maps either. So, okay.
So you're going to have some the polling location. It'd be like, you know, 51A, 51B or whatever. I mean, you're going to have to do a differentiation. It's going to create a little bit of confusion, you know, at that polling location on pulling the Bruce Harris ballot on the tax chain ballot. I will tell you for constituent service purposes, I mean, we'll help everyone we can as we're trying to sort out these census blocks, and we'll always be in communication with, you know, with the speaker and Bruce. You know, if we're thinking it's sitting on a border somewhere, but we're not sure where it is. It doesn't matter. We'd, you know, constituent service level, we're all going to try to help you the best we can.
Regardless. Of course, yeah.
Yep. We'll figure it out the best we can.
Right, exactly.
If you're not sure who's the rep is, call John Keenan. He got the whole city. You know, just call him. The call, there's always John. Just
he'll get it to the right person.
Yeah, 617-722-1494. You know, just
oh, John will appreciate that, I'm sure. Ted.
Call his office. If you're not clue who your rep is, call John's office.
Okay, we'll have to set up a special interview with John now. Yeah. Time to let you give out your information too.
Well, yeah, no, we actually have a phone number change, folks. It's 722-2370, 722-2370.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't tell us they changed our phone numbers. You guys may appreciate this because it happens in your workplace. We went 2 days not knowing our phone number changed.
Oh, that can be an issue. Okay.
Yeah, we're wondering how come we weren't getting phone calls for a little while. And yeah, so we're no different from a lot of places.
Okay, so what is it again?
722-617-672-2370. 722. Nope. Let me double check that.
Now let's make sure about that.
let me look here again. Yeah, it's 2370, 617-722-2370. If you sell a fax machine, I don't think anybody uses a fax, but 617-626-0146, 617-626-0146, if you're using a fax, which I'd be shocked. And then obviously you can email at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. If you're on video, you can just see it across the screen. Tackychan.org continues to be updated as we kind of update new information regarding COVID and proper links to websites as people, obviously websites sometimes change and things like that. So we're trying to sort out exactly, you know, other not-for-profits and any changes on their front as we continue to update that. And of course, State Representative Tackychan Facebook, you know, we do post things on things like, for example, I sent over an email to you on COVID information you know, how to keep safe and whatnot as we continue the public service announcements on that. And of course, in QA TV as well, where we post our weekly or bi-weekly events with you.
Yeah, and we appreciate you utilizing us here to talk to your constituents. It helps us fulfill our mission too. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, I got to really remember getting my family members to look at this every so often. They don't live in state. Just they can check in on me that way.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tacky.
You too. Take care, Joe. See you in a week's time.